Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Thank you for listening in to the International Federation on Aging's podcast series entitled Tackling RSV, Raising Awareness, Driving Prevention. My name is Emma Schmidt, Project and Policy Coordinator with the IFA, and I'm greatly looking forward to discussing with an expert clinician and a member of the public the impacts of RSV and the importance of vaccination during this two-part podcast series. Every year, older adults are at risk of contracting RSV, also known as respiratory syncytial virus, with many experiencing life-altering consequences as a result of the virus. This common respiratory illness is most prevalent during annual peak seasons, which occur during colder months. However, the burden of this vaccine-preventable illness is often misunderstood and underrepresented. I am pleased to be joined today for part one of the Tackling RSV podcast series by Dr. Christine Palme. Dr. Palme graduated from the Western University Schulich School of Medicine in 2006 and completed her residency at the University of Toronto in 2008. She currently manages a busy family medical practice in Midtown Toronto. She is an incredibly accomplished individual, having been listed in Now Magazine's Best of list and was honored by the Federation Medical Women of Canada with their 2016 National Reproductive Health Award. Dr. Palme is a board member on the Canadian Collaborative Research Network. She also serves as a co-editor of the new primary care journal, Primary Care Today. She speaks and writes regularly on topics such as immunization, women's health, and has a passion for public education. So thank you for joining us today, Dr. Palme. It's a great privilege to get to speak with you today on the topic of RSV. Before we get started, I would just like to ask if you could share with us a bit about how and why you became interested in preventative care and immunization.
Firstly, Emma, I'm just so delighted to be here. It's the throes of respiratory virus season, which makes this topic timely and exceptionally pertinent. So I think when I was going through medical school, you rotate and you pretty much get a sense of every single specialty and subspecialty. So the reason I chose family medicine first and foremost was the benefit of patient relationships and knowing your patients consistently over time. I'm just entering my 15th year of practice, and I'm starting to see, you know, what that translates to into health, you know, not necessarily just prescribing things based on research or algorithms, but really having discussions with patients why a particular health issue, whether it be an immunization or a medication, is important for them on a personal level. So that's the first point. The second point in terms of preventative care, I heard a lovely quote, and it stated, good medicine treats disease, excellent medicine prevents disease. And, you know, that staying really resonated with me. And I think certainly now as we emerge from COVID, which I call the plague, and we're trying to find a new sense of normal, the idea of being reactive, which we only had the opportunity to, you know, we were trying to vaccinate ourselves out of a pandemic, is no longer acceptable when we have so many options to be proactive to prevent those emergencies and health crises from happening.
Thank you very much for that. That's gives great background into, you know, why you're such a great speaker for us to talk to today, because that's well aligned with the IFA's work and with the work of our Vaccines for Life campaign as well. The importance of prevention can never be understated. And specifically for, you know, vaccines, that's very, very true. To get a little bit more specific into RSV, would you be able to give us some background information on what RSV is and maybe why it's often confused with other seasonal flus and respiratory infections?
Such an important question and one that I answer almost every day. So first of all, RSV is not new. It's been here. It's just we didn't have the opportunity to provide any sort of primary prevention. We didn't have a vaccine available until recently. So obviously we weren't talking much about it. It is different than COVID. It is different than influenza. It is different than pneumococcal, which is a bacteria. But those are all respiratory illnesses that we tend to talk about, you know, especially during the very long Canadian winter. So RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, a couple of problems. Number one, in terms of clinical diagnoses, it is really hard to differentiate between RSV, COVID, and influenza. Now, COVID, obviously, people have access to testing, but in the community, we're not testing for RSV with nasopharyngeal swabs, and we are not testing as well for influenza. That testing only happens when a patient is tragically hospitalized, which we desperately want to avoid. The second issue is that RSV is often considered by both the public and, to be honest, within medicine as a disease of the young, a pediatric illness. And it's definitely rampant. There were pictures of families lined up outside of hospital for sick children last year trying to get access. You know, very, very common. The problem is that it is equally, if not more impactful in the older patient population over 60. And patients also who are over 60 with comorbid diagnoses, asthma, COPD, diabetes, congestive heart failure. And in fact, RSV is as important as influenza in terms of discussing, you know, good respiratory care. It causes a huge burden to the healthcare system. It can lead to complications, hospitalization, very much akin to influenza. So it's kind of flown under the radar as of until recently, because we didn't really have preventative measures. You know, it was only being tested in hospitals. So it is not new. It's been around. It's just now we have a new tool to be able to help our patients most at risk.
Thank you for that. And thank you for touching on some of those populations that are at risk. You know, you talked a little bit about comorbid conditions and that it is very prevalent in older adults and that it can be very severe in older adults. Could you touch on why the infection is dangerous, particularly among older adults?
So absolutely, two specific reasons. One is immunosuppressants, which means an aging immune system. That's the reality. Our immune system ages with us. I have no option to reverse aging. I'm still working on that. But, you know, older patients just don't have a robust immune system when compared to younger patients. So that's problem number one. And we have to obviously develop vaccines to address this, to make sure that we're getting a good immune response. The second issue is that we age, we collect luggage, baggage, medical baggage, we collect diagnoses. Such as COPD, asthma, heart failure, diabetes. So aging itself puts patients at risk, and comorbid diagnoses that are more common as we progress in years. Those are sort of the two main reasons that we often talk about high-risk patients. And I probably shed a third. So, you know, oftentimes our older patients are living in congregate living facilities, whether it's a nursing home, retirement community, and that close proximity puts them at severe risk for developing these respiratory illnesses, not only RSV, influenza, COVID, et cetera.
What are some of the common symptoms or complications that can arise from RSV, whether, you know, that's in older adults or just in the public in general?
So RSV, really hard to diagnose, as I mentioned. You know, I call it the unholy trinity. Is it COVID? Is it influenza? It's RSV. I mean, typically it's an upper and lower respiratory infection. People will complain of flu-like symptoms, fever, a cough, general malaise. So you can see how the diagnosis is difficult because those are common symptoms across all the respiratory illnesses. We tend to say that there's a bit more wheezing in RSV, which, you know, has been a tool that I've used to kind of tease things out. In terms of complications, so RSV itself can damage airways. And while that acute phase is really important, the damaging of the lower airways, the alveoli, leaves room for other infections to happen. So oftentimes people get into trouble when they have a superimposed bacterial infection as a result of the damage caused by RSV. The other main point is, you know, we talked about patients with comorbidities, such as asthma, COPD, diabetes, the list is endless, you know, immunosuppressed patients, people are immunocompromised. So they're at increased risk of RSV, but RSV itself can exacerbate and worsen a chronic disease. So you can see the tumbleweed rolling down. You know, our patients are more at risk because they have these comorbid diagnoses, they're older, and then the RSV infection themselves pushes them off the cliff and, you know, makes their comorbid conditions worse. And usually, you know, and tragically, for patients who are severely sick, they end up hospitalized in ICU. You can develop secondary complications, you know, an acute event such as a stroke, a heart attack we see often. And that's what actually keeps people in the hospital. Likewise, and I actually think, you know, we often forget to mention this, if a patient is lucky enough to be discharged, you know, they often don't leave in the same shape as they were prior to contracting RSV. They're incapacitated, they have a worsening health condition, they're often left, you know, needing help. And I think that concept of lack of independence and ending up in a long-term care facility, not being able to function, is equally as important when discussing, you know, primary prevention and vaccination. We're not only prevented the acute disease, the complications from a health perspective, but we're trying to keep our older patients independent and functioning with a good quality of life.
That really highlights the relationship between a communicable disease, like a vaccine preventable disease like RSV, with chronic non-communicable conditions. And I think that's often overlooked. So thank you for highlighting that. And thank you for highlighting the importance of independence and functional ability as well. Because it's not just about hospital stays and being discharged. It is about that quality of life after infection that can really highlight the value in prevention and in vaccination. You mentioned earlier that you like to highlight with your patients that RSV isn't new. So it sounds like you've been having this conversation quite frequently. And I guess as we're entering cold and flu season here in Canada, I'm sure it's coming up more and more. Where did you initially learn about RSV? And what resources would you recommend patients use to learn more about RSV and the RSV vaccine?
That's such an excellent question. I always say access to information is not only essential, but it's an empowering force, you know, understanding what's what. The problem is that there's a lot of misinformation out there. So in terms of credible sites, CDC, the WHO, Public Health Canada, we also have obviously public health branches that are provincial, provide excellent information. And then some organizations such as Asthma Canada, you know, they have some information about RSV as well. I also would like to include primary care providers. You know, patients often access me specifically to educate them. So I think it's really essential for our listeners to understand, you know, it's busy. The healthcare system is overburdened. Vaccine fatigue is rampant. And, you know, I'm embarrassed to say it sometimes actually affects medical personnel and primary care physicians when we're trying to catch up on everything else. So accessing your primary care physician and not only discussing RSV, but discussing what other vaccine preventable diseases can you prevent yourself from. You know, RSV has common risk factors to influenza and COVID. So I often bundle the discussion and talk about a patient's respiratory health armor. How are they going to get through this winter so that they can snowbird in Florida if that's important? They can continue with their activities in a healthy way.
Yeah, thank you for that. Highlighting that triple-demic, as it's sometimes called, the relationship of RSV with these other respiratory illnesses is really important. And looking at, you know, opportunities to have a bundled conversation. And I love what you said about respiratory armor. You know, it's not just about RSV. It's not just about influenza or COVID. It's so important to kind of maintain that protection across the board with a comprehensive immunization plan. Do you think that the public or the patients that you're seeing, do they have a general understanding of RSV infection and the availability of the vaccine, or is that still something that is quite new to patients?
You know, I think it's become more part of the public knowledge reservoir as of late. You know, obviously there's been some public health campaigns, et cetera, but no, there's absolutely confusion. And, you know, quite frankly, not just amongst the public, but also as part of the medical community. So I spend a lot of time educating patients about the main points that we discussed. It's not just a disease of the pediatric community. It causes complications very similar to influenza. And now with a new vaccine, which we'll obviously spend some time talking about, available, we have the option to provide protection to our patients most at risk. But yeah, I mean, there's still myth busting that has to happen. And I think it has to happen across the board.
Yeah. Do you have any tips or tricks that you'd like to share about how yourself as a healthcare provider, you're addressing the confusion of RSV with other respiratory illnesses, or how you're doing that myth busting?
Well, I mean, I bring up the topic ad nauseum. My practice hears me speak about vaccines almost every single day. And I think I talk exactly about the points that we've discussed, that it's different than COVID, it's different than influenza, it's not new. We just have a vaccine that's available now. Often people ask, well, is this a variant of COVID? I have to discuss that. So just spending that moment with patients and going through the main points and differentiating the different viruses, but also providing some reassurance that now we can package RSV with influenza and COVID and offer them a vaccine to protect themselves.
Thank you for that. I'd like to talk a little bit about the seasonality of diseases such as RSV. But before we do that, would you be able to provide us a bit of a definition or an explanation of why we see seasonal trends in respiratory illnesses like this?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of respiratory season, it coincides with weather changes, et cetera. These viruses have a cyclical nature. Everybody knows about influenza. RSV has a little bit of a longer time period, and it differs according to where you are on the globe. So in Canada, we typically say it starts in November-ish and can last up until April. I'm sort of seeing an upstroke in cases now. And I think I definitely was seeing some cases as well in September. As the weather changes and mutations change, we have to wash, rinse, and repeat again for the upcoming season. So I think people are a bit frustrated, right? There's obviously a bit of rallying that happens. Oh my goodness, we're due for another vaccine, but that's the reality. And we do our best to try to match vaccines with the particular strains that are circulating. RSV has two strains, and we have a good vaccine available that covers both. Whether that changes next year, who knows? The important point is that medicine is based in science, and science evolves with research. So medicine has to evolve. And I don't often use the word change because change implies we made a mistake. We were being secretive. Medicine should evolve with the current research trends.
Yeah, the importance of, evidence-informed decision making, whether that's as a patient, as a practitioner, is so important. And I hope that, patients are aware of that, and it's great to hear that you're addressing that with your patients, that the idea of medicine changing and the recommendations being continually updated as we learn more about these infections is so important. With RSV specifically, and the fact that the seasonality is similar to other respiratory illnesses, and we've talked about how the symptoms are similar to other respiratory illnesses, does that contribute to barriers in receiving an RSV diagnosis? I know you said it's hard as the practitioner to do that diagnosis. Is there any reasons besides the symptoms that are kind of creating these barriers, or maybe contributing to a lack of understanding the true prevalence of RSV?
I think the lack of testing in the community is absolutely one of the most significant barriers for a couple of reasons. Oftentimes, if we're not giving a diagnosis, patients become less concerned, right? Number two, without data, it's really hard to convince public health to robustly support mass vaccination and, potentially as well coverage. So, just of note, in Ontario, public health as of present is covering RSV vaccination for long-term care residents, but it's only that population. So until we can actually have data, which means that we need to do diagnostic testing in the community, it's hard to launch a petition to actually have vaccination covered. So, cost rolls into it as well. So I think diagnosis is at the crux of so many issues. Whether it happens, who knows? Hopefully down the road, in office it will be a triple screen for COVID, influenza, and RSV for that exact reason. Symptomatically, and in terms of treatment, I mean, obviously, if you have COVID, we have some specific treatments to COVID, but for milder cases of RSV that don't end up in the hospital, the treatment is rest, fluids, hydration, and supportive care, very similar to everything else. But potentially, if we do have a diagnosis en masse, it just increases awareness as well among the public and promotes vaccination. People who are, who have RSV are miserable, perhaps not miserable enough to end up in the hospital, which is a good thing. But it's not a pleasant experience, and that nagging cough, which means so much more now than it did pre-March 2020. I have many patients who have a what I think is an RSV-related cough, and they're at work, and they're often being ostracized by their colleagues if they have a cough and they're at work. So yes, diagnosis is important at so many levels. Whether that happens in the short term or not, I don't know.
Yeah, those long-term effects, like you're talking about, that lingering cough, the maybe step down in functional ability, those are so important to highlight the severity of an illness like this. It's not just about hospitalizations, it's living with it and living through it. That's so important. That slides in well to talking about vaccination and the importance of preventing this before it even happens. At IFA and with Vaccines for Life, we've focused on vaccination across the life course. So, not just looking at vaccination in the pediatric sense, but encouraging vaccination no matter what your age is, and ensuring that that's a comprehensive vaccination plan. Could you share a little bit about what you believe the benefits of vaccination across the life course are and how vaccination promotes healthy aging?
So absolutely, one of the reasons we've covered several of them, but just to summarize is, a vaccine preventable disease can actually lead to severe outcomes, hospitalization, death in some cases, an exacerbation of comorbidities, COPD, asthma, diabetes. So, maintaining a health status is the number one reason. Number two would be quality of life. We talked about patients who are discharged from the hospital after a severe episode of whether it's RSV, influenza, and end up not being able to live independently. That changes a patient's life trajectory. And everybody wants to not only live long, but live with a high quality of life. So live long in health. Second reason. And the third reason is that our healthcare system is completely overburdened now. So accessing care is very difficult. And I think it's always like saying you're getting an insurance policy. When I bought my house, I bought fire insurance. My house is probably not going to burn down. But if it does, I want to make sure I can cash in that policy. And I use, proactive vaccination in a similar sense when discussing with patients as well.
Thank you for that. So as we've talked about, there is a new RSV vaccine that's available to people in many countries, and Canada included in that. And like you've touched on, that's for older adults, and there's a big emphasis on people living in long-term care and community care centers. For other older adults, what are some barriers that you're expecting to see to have these individuals vaccinated? And how can we combat these barriers, whether that's from a healthcare provider perspective or on the policy and advocacy side? What are ways that we can kind of work preventatively, and also how we're creating equity and access to vaccines?
Essential question. So first of all, there's a cost associated with a vaccine. In Ontario, as I mentioned, they're covering it for long-term care residents. That may trickle into other provinces, but it's a costly vaccine, and finances are a barrier for patients. So that's probably number one in terms of addressing that. Obviously, we need to have advocacy. We need to prove that this vaccine, prevents long-term outcomes, hospitalizations, etc. The second barrier would be education and awareness. We talked about the myriad of reasons why RSV is underappreciated, underdiagnosed, etc. And I think the third thing is access, not only in terms of finances or access to information, knowledge, but it's access to healthcare providers, right? Many Canadians don't have a primary care physician. Obviously, the scope of pharmacists, nurse practitioners is changing, but you know, where are these vaccines going to be administered? The authorities at present in Ontario, where I'm located, have not granted permission to pharmacists to vaccinate, which is a huge issue and hopefully will change. But I think patients have to start asking questions. If I can't access a family doctor, who else can I access for counseling and information?
Thank you for that. What motivations are you seeing in your patients that are pushing them to get vaccinated or ask questions about vaccines at this time?
You know, we've emerged 3 years from being sick, and we're sick and tired of being sick and tired. When patients hear that there's a potential other respiratory virus that can cause severe problems, they're on board in general. I haven't had much pushback. You know, everybody wants to be able to enjoy their vacations, to enjoy their holidays. Nobody's interested in self-isolating if, you know, it's absolutely necessary. So if I'm offering them an option to not only increase their long-term health quality of life, but to get them through the holiday season without being sick, that really resonates with people. And that's a new phenomenon since COVID.
That's great to hear that you haven't had too much pushback and you're able to use these, you know, motivating factors to drive vaccination and, you know, bring about more awareness of this illness, RSV specifically, but also kind of like you've mentioned before, tie in these other common respiratory illnesses that are popping up around the same time. Do you have any examples of how you've utilized these motivators to promote vaccination in somebody that maybe is vaccine hesitant or is maybe just unaware of RSV?
I mean, I think providing education, and I actually say, you know, we have a triad of respiratory diseases or viruses that I'd like to focus on. You know, first being COVID, making sure your vaccine status is updated, the second being influenza, and now new to the game, RSV, because we have an option available. And educating, you know, making patients aware, that's the first step. In terms of guidance we've had from governing bodies, so at present, NACI has not put out a statement. NACI is very busy. But we have some advice from ACIP, which is the NACI version in the United States, as well as some CDC, WHO suggestions. And at present in Canada, if you're following the ACIP guidance, they've recommended, you know, considering the vaccine for patients over 60, particularly those with comorbid conditions, but also have a caveat that, you know, there are other patients that, you know, are over 60, perhaps with mild comorbidities or even no comorbidities that should be considered as part of vaccination. So I think being transparent, you know, in saying what is actually the advice here, what's forthcoming. But I think, you know, the final point is, you know, looping back to your first question, why I, you know, chose to focus on preventative care, which I expanded to family medicine in general, is that I have that intimate relationships with my patients. You know, I know what they're dealing with. I know if they're going to Florida. I know if they struggled during COVID. I know what happened to them, you know, when they got their influenza, when they missed their influenza vaccine and ended up in hospital. And those intimate discussions that are personalized, you know, in my opinion, I have hopefully, you know, changed the dial and will sort of be a light bulb moment for a patient. And then, you know, we talked about talking about a respiratory health preventative package, you know, all those small discussions, education points, and quite frankly, time to counsel and educate patients translate to vaccine uptake increased, you know, across the board. That's been proven.
Yeah. The importance of trust between a care provider and a patient is often brought up in conversations around vaccination. And I'm glad to see that that's something that you've experienced as well, taking a little bit more time to personalize that discussion and to build trust with your patient is incredibly important and valued and really does make a big difference in terms of providing these recommendations and this information. Is there anything additional to that, to having that trust and that rapport, that you believe healthcare providers and civil society organizations can do to increase the uptake of RSV vaccination this season?
Education, awareness, and persistence. You know, repeating messages, being consistent, and eventually the message, you know, it spreads like wildfire.
Yeah. And hopefully it's that message that's spreading and not the illness itself. So, thank you for that call to action. I think that's a great place to kind of end things off for today. But before we go, I'd love it if you could just provide a key takeaway message or a summary for the people that are listening in today.
Number one, education and awareness. Go to reliable resources and find out what's available. Number two, discuss your risk factors with the healthcare provider and, whether a vaccine is appropriate for you. And number three, rally on. People often say, I'm tired of COVID. I'm tired of influenza. I guess new to the game. I'm tired of RSV. Well, those viruses aren't tired, nor are they done with us. So we need to be persistent and, make sure that we're having those ongoing discussions.
Thank you for that. That's a great way to end this off. The importance of persistence throughout the vaccine landscape, encouraging vaccination throughout these seasonal illnesses. So thank you for that, Dr. Palmain. Thank you for your time. And thank you to those who are listening into our podcast today. This certainly has helped to contextualize the burden of RSV and some important conversations around RSV vaccination, but also the immunization against all vaccine-preventable diseases. So thank you once again. Thank you once again for tuning in to the IFA's podcast series, Tackling RSV, Raising Awareness, Driving Prevention. This podcast is one of a two-part series, and we encourage listeners to tune in to additional podcasts and find more information on RSV and other vaccine-preventable diseases by visiting the Vaccines for Life website or by following the IFA on social media at IFAging. We would also like to take time to thank GSK Canada for their support of the Tackling RSV campaign through the provision of an unrestricted educational grant. Thank you again for your time, thank you for listening, and thank you for learning more about RSV.